much more. Now Alec's hand was outstretched to him, and Magnus took it like the offer of trust it was. Alec's skin was cool. Magnus pressed his cheek to their joined hands, closing his eyes for just a moment, letting his relief that Alec was all right wash over him. Alec's skin had been hot with fever for a while there, but Magnus was very experienced in treating the Nephilim, since shadow hunters, however loving, were all reckless lunatics. Of course, Alec had been a reckless lunatic in the cause of saving Magnus's life. He thought of Alec balancing atop the train car as it hurtled around twisting mountain passes, his clothes wet, his skin smeared with blood and dust. It was heartbreaking and hot all at once.
"I've been better." Alec's bedsheets were damp from sweat, but color was returning to his face. He sat up, and the blanket slid down to his bare waist. "I've been worse, too. Thanks for healing me."
Magnus sat up and hovered his free hand over Alec's chest. A faint blue glow expanded from his palm and shimmered before disappearing through Alec's skin.
"Your heartbeat is stronger.
You should have asked me to take care of that poison immediately." Alec shook his head.
"If you recall, an octopus demon was carrying you away."
"Yes," Magnus said. "About that, I deeply appreciate you saving my life. I'm very attached to my life. However, if it comes to a choice between your life and mine, Alec, remember, I have already lived a very long time." It was strange to say. Immortality was a difficult thing to talk about. Magnus barely remembered being young, but he had never been old, either. He had been with mortals of varying ages, and he had never been able to comprehend how time felt for them. Nor had they ever been able to understand him. Yet, cutting himself off from mortals would mean severing his ties with the world. Life would become a long wait without warmth or connection until his heart died. After a century of loneliness, anyone would go mad. Alec risking himself for Magnus's sake? That felt like madness as well. Alec's eyes were narrowed.
"What are you saying?"
Magnus linked his fingers with Alec's. Their hands lay on the bedsheet, Alec's pale and rune-marked, Magnus's brown and gleaming with rings. "You should keep yourself safe first. Your safety, it's more important. It means more than mine."
Alec said, "I would say the same thing to you."
"But you'd be wrong."
"That's a matter of opinion." "What was that demon?"
Magnus had to admire the brazenness with which Alec changed the subject.
"Why did it attack you?"
Magnus had been wondering that himself. "Attacking is what demons usually do," said Magnus. "If it was after me specifically, I assume it was jealous of my style and charm." Alec wasn't distracted. Magnus hadn't really believed he would be.
"Have you ever seen anything like it? We need to figure out the best way to fight another one if it comes. If I could get to the New York Library, check the bestiaries, maybe I could get Isabel to do it."
"Oh, you relentless Nephilim," said Magnus, letting Alec's hand go before Alec could let him go first. "Can't you get your bursts of energy from caffeine like everybody else?"
"The demon was a Romburudmava," said a woman's voice from behind them. "It takes a powerful magic to coax one out of its lair."
Alec snatched the blanket up with one hand to cover himself, while grabbing his seraph blade with the other. "Also," said Magnus without raising his voice, "may I introduce our new friend, Xin Yanzheng. She dissolved the demon attacking us into vapor. It made an excellent first impression." Alec and Xin Yan both regarded Magnus with disbelief.
"My first impression of her," Alec pointed out with some sharpness, "was her attacking me at the shadow market." "My first impression of you," Xin Yan returned, "was you attacking me. All I wanted to do was talk to Magnus, but you drew a weapon on me."
"We should probably have a little chat to clear things up," Magnus agreed. He'd been too worried about Alec to think it through before. Xin Yan had dropped to her knees and started helping him heal Alec's wounds. At the time, that was all he had needed to know.
"Yes," Xin Yan agreed. "Why don't we continue this conversation outside, with all of us dressed?"
"I'd appreciate that,"
said Alec.
I suggest the bar car.
Magnus brightened. I'd appreciate that. They regrouped in the Downworlder bar. The room was still packed, but the crowd was noticeably more subdued after the demon attack. Three spots in a row at the main bar were suddenly vacant, and as they sat down on the stools, a free bottle of champagne and three glasses appeared, without them having ordered it. When Alec looked suspiciously around, a vampire shot him a wink and finger guns. Magnus might not have to worry so much about all Downworlders hating Alec, not on this train, anyway.
I didn't think Shadowhunters were this popular among Downworlders, said Xinyan.
Only my Shadowhunter, Magnus said, pouring. The bar was lit from above with hanging brass pendants. Their warm light fell full on Xinyan's countenance. Her lips and eyes moved when she spoke, but the rest of her round face, unblinking eyelids and smooth cheeks did not. Her voice was dry and seemed to float from her mouth without cadence. That was her warlock mark, the effectless face. All warlocks were uniquely marked, the markings usually appearing in early childhood, often resulting in tragedy. Magnus's mark was his golden cat eyes. Magnus's stepfather had called them windows into hell. Magnus could not stop remembering kneeling on top of the train car, frantic with fear, Alec losing consciousness in his arms. Magnus had seen the demon dissipate into smoke around Xinyan as she threw her hood back and looked down at him. He'd recognized her immediately, not who she was, but that she was like him, a warlock. It had been quite an entrance.
Let's chat, said Alec. Why were you following us? Specifically, why were you following Magnus through the shadow market in Paris?
I'm after the Crimson Hand, Xinyan answered. I heard Magnus Bane was their leader.
I'm not.
He's not, Alec said sharply.
I know, Xinyan said.
Magnus saw a tiny relaxation of tension in Alec's shoulders. Her dark eyes returned to Magnus and held his gaze.
I've already heard of you, of course. Magnus Bane, the High Warlock of Brooklyn. Everyone has something to say about you.
That makes sense, said Magnus. I'm well known for my taste in fashion and the hospitality of my parties.
It's true that everybody seems to trust you, Xinyan continued. It's not like I wanted to believe you were running some cult. But recently, I've been hearing it over and over. Magnus Bane is the Crimson Hand's founder, the one they call the Great Poison.
Magnus hesitated. Maybe. But I don't remember it. My memories of that time period have been altered. I wish I did know.
Alec gave him a look that, though Magnus was unable to read minds, very clearly communicated the idea that he was shocked Magnus was trusting this total stranger with an important and dangerous secret. Magnus, on the other hand, felt oddly relieved that he'd admitted out loud that he might have founded the Crimson Hand, even to a peculiar stranger. After all, he had made the joke to Ragnar. He'd seen Tessa's picture. He knew he was missing years of memory. Which was likelier, that those were all coincidences, or that he'd actually done it? He wished he could travel back in time and kick himself in the head.
You're missing memories? You think the Crimson Hand took them? Xinyan said.
Possibly, said Magnus. Look, I don't want a cult, he added. He felt strongly he should make his position on cults well understood. I am not out to take over the cult. I am out to shut down the cult and try to pay back whatever fault I bear for the bad stuff they've done. I want the memories back, and I want to know why they're gone. But that's more of a personal curiosity. The important thing is, no more demonic cults that feel any kinship with Magnus Bane. Also, they have ruined a romantic vacation that was getting off, I thought, to a very good start. He drained his drink. After almost getting thrown off a train, he deserved one. He deserved more than one.
It was getting off to a very good start, Alec muttered, looking at Xinyan in a manner that suggested that though she'd saved his life,
her presence was no longer required. Magnus considered saying something about how now no one was getting off at all, but decided it was not the time.
"You can understand why I might have been suspicious," began Qin Yan.
"You can understand why we might be more suspicious," countered Alec.
Qin Yan glared. "Until I saw the wrong brute moth attacking you," she said, "I know the Crimson Hand well enough to know the way they operate. The current leader must be trying to kill you, Bane, which means that whatever happened in the past, now they consider you their enemy. I may have stopped them last night, but they will likely try again."
"How do you know so much about them?" said Alec. "And what do you want?"
Qin Yan lifted her glass to her lips and took a slow, careful sip. Magnus admired, not for the first time, her intuitive sense of dramatic timing.
"My goal is the same as yours. I intend to destroy the Crimson Hand."
Magnus felt uncomfortable at the presumption of her declaring his goal for him. He wanted to quibble with it, but the more he thought about it, the more he realized she was right. In the end, it probably would come to that.
"Why?" Alec asked, focusing on the more important thing. "What did the Crimson Hand do to you?"
Qin Yan looked out the window at the pale reflected globes of lamplight against the night.
"They hurt me very badly," she said,
and Magnus felt a sinking feeling at the pit of his stomach. Whatever the Crimson Hand had done, if he had founded them, he was at least somewhat responsible. Qin Yan's hands began to tremble, and she pressed them together to hide it.
"The details are not important. The Crimson Hand is amassing sacrifices, human sacrifices, of course, toward raising a great demon. They've been killing fairies, mundanes, even warlocks."
She looked back at Magnus, unblinking.
"They think that is their path to ultimate power."
"A greater demon?" exclaimed Alec.
The horror and loathing in his voice was entirely understandable. He had nearly been killed by a greater demon. It still made Magnus's stomach twist. He finished his second drink and poured himself another. So, the most banal, typical thing for an evil cult to want. Power. Power through some demon. Why do they always think they'll be spared? Demons aren't known for their sense of fair play. Magnus sighed. Wouldn't you think a cult I founded might have a more creative spirit? Also, I would have assumed a cult I founded wouldn't be evil. That part remains a surprise to me.
"People I loved are dead because of the Crimson Hand," Qin Yan went on.
"Maybe the details do matter," said Alec.
Qin Yan gripped her glass so tightly that her knuckles went white.
"I still would prefer not to speak of it."
Alec looked dubious.
"If you want me to trust you, you'll have to trust me," said Qin Yan plainly. "For now, all you need to know is that I wish for revenge against the Crimson Hand for the crimes they have committed against me and against my loved ones. That is all. If you are against them, we're on the same side."
"Everyone has their secrets, Alec," said Magnus softly, feeling a wash in his own. "If the Crimson Hand is trying to kill me for some reason, we can use all the help we can get." Magnus could be forgiving of Qin Yan choosing not to disclose her past. After all, apparently, he couldn't even remember his own. He wanted to believe that talking about things made them better, but in his experience, sometimes talking made everything worse. A silence fell between them. Qin Yan sipped her drink and remained silent herself. Magnus was terrified, and not for his own life. He kept thinking about the moment Alec had collapsed on the roof of the train, when he had believed with cold horror that Alec was dying for him. He was afraid for Alec, and afraid of what he himself might have done that he could not now remember. He couldn't tell what Alec was thinking, but as he watched, Alec smiled, just a little, and reached out across the bar. His strong, scarred fingers curled around Magnus's, their hands joined in the tiny pool of light cast by the candle. Magnus wanted to grab Alec and kiss him breathless, but he suspected Xin Yun would not appreciate the show.
"You're right," Alec said. "I guess the enemy of my enemy is my friend, or at least a friendly acquaintance. Better if we team up."
He lowered his voice. "But she's not sleeping in our hotel rooms."
"All reconciled?" asked Xin Yun.
"Because sorry to be rude, but this is incredibly awkward to sit through. I'm not here to witness your relationship growth. I just want to defeat the evil cult."
Magnus had made up his mind. Whatever else was going on, whether he owed Xin Yun for saving their lives or for how the Crimson Hand had harmed her, she knew a great deal. It would be foolishness not to keep her close by. "Let's all enjoy our refreshments and assume for now that we're all on the same side. Can you tell us about your more recent past, at least?" Xin Yun considered for a moment, and then seemed to come to some decision within herself.
"I've been hunting the Crimson Hand for some time. I received updates from an informant in their ranks called Mori Shu. I was closing in on them. And then they found another spy in their ranks, abandoned their mansion, and went into hiding. I ran out of leads. But then I heard from a reliable source that the Spiral Labyrinth had given you a chance to go after the cult."
"If she learned that, maybe someone else did," Alec said. "Maybe that's why the Hand wants you dead, Magnus."
"Maybe," Magnus said. It was a solid theory, but there was still too much he didn't remember. He had the sinking feeling there was plenty he could have done to turn the Hand against him. Xin Yun didn't seem interested.
"I tracked you around Paris, watching your movements, and I decided to approach you at the Shadow Market when the Shadow Hunter attacked me."
"I was protecting Magnus," Alec said. "I understand that," said Xin Yun. "You fight well."
There was a tiny pause.
"So do you," Alec said.
The leader of the Crimson Hand, whoever he might be, knew they were coming. Magnus wanted to be safe. He wanted Alec to be safe. He wanted this to be over. "Let's get another bottle," he said, gesturing with one hand toward the bartender. "And toast to our new partnership." The fresh bottle arrived at the table, and their glasses refilled. Magnus raised his in a toast. "Well," he said with a small smile, "on to Venice." They toasted and drank. Magnus thought of more pleasant things than demonic cults. He considered the city of liquid glass and moving waters, the city of canals and dreamers. He watched Alec, whole and well, his blue eyes clear and his voice an anchor in a wild sea. Magnus realized he'd been wrong to think Paris was the city to get the relationship off to a good start. Even before the demon-worshipping cult, Alec hadn't been that impressed with the Eiffel Tower or the hot air balloon, not the way Magnus wanted him to be. Paris was a city of love, but it could also be a city of surfaces, of bright lights that slid away and were quickly lost. Magnus did not want to lose this one. He would set a better scene. He would get things right this time. Venice was the place for Alec. Venice had depth.
Part 2. City of Masks. Venice once was dear, the pleasant place of all festivity, the revel of the earth, the mask of Italy. Lord Byron. Chapter 10. Labyrinth of Water. Magnus threw the curtains open and stepped onto the balcony of the hotel room. "Ah, Venice, there is no city in the world like you." Alec trailed him outside and leaned over the railing. His gaze followed a gondola snaking along the canal and disappearing around a corner. "It's a bit smelly."
"That's the ambiance," Alec grinned. "Well, the ambiance is pretty strong."
The only good thing about the previous night's demon attack was that between the dozen or so glamour spells in place on the part of all the participants, and a number of the bystanders, the mundanes responsible for the actual running of the train hadn't noticed the enormous ruckus or the giant hole in one of their passenger cars. They pulled into Venice at 10 in the morning, almost on time. One water taxi ride later, they arrived at the Belmont Hotel Cipriani, just a few blocks from the Crimson Hand's former headquarters. Magnus wandered back into their suite and pointed at his suitcases. They each split open and began to unload themselves. Blazers and coats flew into the waiting closet. Undergarments folded themselves into the drawers. Shoes walked into a neat row by the door, and valuables locked themselves into the safe. He spun back to Alec, who was watching the movement of the sun through the cloudless sky with a slight frown.
"I know what you're thinking," said Magnus. "Breakfast."
"We don't have a time," said Xin Yun, barging into their suite without knocking. "We should go search the abandoned headquarters at once."
She, of course, had already changed into a kind of Italian-cut power suit that shone iridescent with enchantments and protections. Magnus gave her a disapproving look.
"We have not worked together very long, Xin Yun Zheng, but one thing you should learn about me quickly is that I am very serious about my meals."
Xin Yun looked at Alec, who nodded.
"I may at any moment organize an entire step in our mission around visiting a particular restaurant or bar. If I do so, it will be worth your while."
"If it's so important," Xin Yun began,
"we will be eating 3 meals a day. Breakfast will be one of those meals. In fact, breakfast will be the most important of those meals, because breakfast is the most important meal of the day."
Xin Yun looked at Alec, who said, in a deadpan voice,
"Many a mission to end a great evil has failed because of low blood sugar."
"You do listen when I talk," exclaimed Magnus. Alec gave Xin Yun an apologetic smile that she did not return.
"Fine," said Xin Yun. "So where does your agenda begin today?"
Magnus's agenda, luckily, began downstairs at the hotel's own Oro restaurant. They sat al fresco on the deck, watching a small parade of boats float by along the lagoon. Alec wolfed down 2 crepes and considered ordering a third. Magnus enjoyed an espresso, the menu's most complicated-sounding egg dish, and the gleaming turquoise canal.
"I was thinking that you might enjoy Venice more than Paris," he told Alec.
"I liked Paris," said Alec. "This is nice, too."
He braced himself with a visible effort, turned to Xin Yun, and tried to make conversation.
"This is my first time traveling for fun. I've always stayed close to home before. Where's home for you?"
Magnus had to turn his face away to watch the boats for a moment. Sometimes, the tenderness he felt for Alec actually hurt. Xin Yun hesitated.
"Korea was home, when I had a home. The Korea of the Joseon Dynasty."
There was a pause.
"Was it a hard place to be a warlock?"
Xin Yun looked at Magnus and said,
"Every place is a hard place to be a warlock child."
"That's true," Magnus said.
"Originally, I am from a small village near Mount Kuol. My warlock marks manifested red. I was 14, and betrothed to Yu Sang, a handsome boy from a good family in my village. When my face froze over, everyone believed I had turned into a Hanya demon or had been possessed by a Guisin. My betrothed said he did not care."
Her voice trembled very slightly.
"He would still have married me, but he was killed by a demon. I would devote my life to hunting demons in his honor. I've made a detailed study of demons over centuries. I know their ways. I know their names. And I have never and will never summon a demon."
Magnus sat back and took a sip of coffee.
"Alec, remember last night, when our new acquaintance told us she couldn't tell us anything about her past?"
Xin Yun laughed.
"That's ancient history. I had many years between then and now to have a past in.
after all of that was behind me.
Well, said Magnus, I understand why you've made your choice, but for the record, I summon demons all the time. Well, not literally all the time, but when I'm paid to do so. Within the bounds of my code of ethics, obviously.
Xin Yan thought this over. But you don't like demons. You don't mind killing them.
They're violent, mindless despoilers of our world, so no, said Magnus. I don't mind killing them. My boyfriend is a shadow hunter, for heaven's sake. Literally, for heaven's sake.
I'd noticed, said Xin Yun dryly.
There was a brief, awkward silence, broken by Xin Yun gesturing into the air a miniature floating image of the octopus monster they'd bought the night before.
I'm going to have another espresso, said Magnus, gesturing to the waiter with his empty cup.
This Rom Broodmata, for example, it has no bones and can regrow its flesh. You can cut it or pierce it as much as you like, but it will regenerate its organs and limbs too quickly to end it that way. You must instead tear it apart from the inside. That is why I use a sonic spell.
You fought them before? Said Alec.
I hunted one in the Himalayas 100 years ago, when it terrorized a local village.
The discussion veered into demon hunting, which was deeply boring to Magnus, but intensely exciting to Alec. So he sat back, sipped his espresso, and watched as the minutes passed, until there was a pause in the conversation and he cleared his throat and said quietly,
If we're all done with breakfast, we could go check out that Crimson Hand headquarters we've all heard so much about.
Xin Yun had the grace to look a little embarrassed as they went back from the restaurant to the lobby. Magnus arranged for the hotel to call a water taxi for them. By the time it arrived to pick them up, Xin Yun and Alec were back to swapping demon murder tips.
The secret of Venice is that its streets are an unknowable maze, but its canals make a strange kind of sense. Rather than navigating the alleys of a city with no posted street signs of any kind, their water taxi was able to let them off within sight of the palazzo that was their destination. That palazzo's golden walls were festooned with white marble pillars and arches decorated in scarlet stucco. The windows of what was referred to elsewhere as the ground floor, and in Venice was called the water floor, were unusually large, risking flooding for beauty. The glass reflected the canal waters, turning moody turquoise into shining jade.
Magnus could not imagine setting up a cult, but if he were going to, he could easily envision himself choosing this building for it.
It's your kind of place, said Alec.
It's amazing, said Magnus.
What I mostly notice about it, though, said Alec, is all the people going in and out of it. Didn't your friend Tessa say it was abandoned?
Venice was always crowded with people, turning the streets into as much living motion as the canals, but Alec was right. There was a steady stream of people passing through the double front doors of the palazzo.
What if the Crimson Hand is still operating here? Alec asked.
Xin Yun's voice was eager.
Then that makes our job easier.
These are obviously not cultists, said Magnus. Look how bored they are.
Indeed, the men and women going in and out of the palazzo seemed like they were just going about their jobs. They carried piles of cloth, or cardboard boxes, or stacks of chairs. Someone in chef's whites came through with a stack of chafing dishes covered in aluminum foil. No robes, no masks, no vials of blood, no live animals for sacrifice. Some of them were downworlders, Magnus could see. He headed for the most downworldly he could find, a green-skinned dryad standing just next to the front doors, talking intensely to a satyr who was holding a clipboard. As he approached, the dryad started.
Wow! Are you Magnus Bane?
Do I know you? Said Magnus.
No, but you definitely could, the dryad said, blowing Magnus a kiss.
Alec coughed loudly from behind Magnus. I'm flattered, but as you can hear, I'm spoken for. Well, coughed for.
Pity,
said the dryad. He tapped the satyr on the chest.
This is Magnus Bane.
Without looking up from the clipboard, the satyr said,
Magnus Bane isn't invited to the party because he's dating a shadow hunter. I heard.
The Dryad gave them an apologetic look.
Ixnay on the Addo Hunter Shay,
he stage whispered to the satyr.
The Addo Hunter Shay is right there, and he can hear, hey, ooh, yay.
Yeah, I've also cracked your secret code language, Alec said dryly. Magnus looked hurt and turned to his companions.
I can't believe I'm not invited to the party.
I'm Magnus Bane. Even these guys know it.
What party? Said Xinyan.
I'm sorry, Magnus went on. Let me get a hold of myself. A party where Alec isn't welcome isn't a party I'd want to attend.
Magnus, what party? Said Xinyan.
I think Xinyan finds it unusual, said Alec very slowly to Magnus, that there's a party with Downworlders being thrown in the Crimson Hand's former headquarters.
You,
said Xinyan to the Dryad in a commanding tone.
What did he say about the party?
The Dryad looked puzzled, but he answered readily enough.
The masked ball tonight, to celebrate Valentine Morgenstern's defeat in the Mortal War. This huge place just turned up on the market, and a warlock rented it out for a big bash. People from all over the Shadow World are attending. A whole bunch of us came down by train from Paris.
He puffed his chest out, cheeks emerald with pride. You know, if the Downworlders hadn't banded together to defeat him, the whole world would have been endangered.
The Shadow Hunters were involved, said Alec.
The Dryad flapped a hand, leaves fluttering at his wrist.
I heard they helped.
So a lot of people are coming to this fete? Magnus asked. I was hoping to meet up with a warlock friend of mine. His name is Mori Shu. Is he on the list? Behind him, Magnus heard Xinyan draw in a quick breath. The satyr flipped through his papers.
Yes, here he is. Someone told me he might not make it, though. Something about him laying low recently. Some demon thing.
You are, of course, completely invited, said the Dryad to Magnus. You and your companions. It was an oversight that you weren't on the guest list already. The satyr took this in and dutifully flipped to the end of his list to write in Magnus's name. I am very offended to have been excluded from the invitations, and therefore I, and my companions, will definitely be attending, said Magnus loftily. The Dryad took a moment to comprehend, then nodded.
Doors will open at 8.
We'll be there much, much later than that, said Magnus, because of our already very packed social calendar.
Of course, said the Dryad.
They headed down the steps and reconnoitered there.
This is perfect, said Alec. We go to the party, we sneak away, we find the chamber. Easy enough.
Xinyan nodded agreement.
You two think you're going to a party? Magnus asked. Dressed like that?
Alec and Xinyan looked at each other. Xinyan was wearing her power suit, which was expensive, but the opposite of party wear. Her samgakuto was at her belt. Alec was wearing a faded t-shirt and jeans that somehow had paint on them. Magnus had already added to Alec's wardrobe in Paris, but they definitely didn't have carnival masks or elaborate costumes, which, as far as Magnus was concerned, made for an excellent opportunity for one of his favorite things.
Come, demon hunters, he said grandly. We're going shopping.
Chapter 11. Masks.
I don't say this lightly, said Magnus, but... Ta-da!
Magnus had taken them to La Mercerie for what he promised would be a shopping extravaganza. Alec had gone shopping with Magnus before, so he was pretty familiar with the process. He waited at each store with half a dozen bags as the warlock tried on nearly everything, from traditional suits to matador traje de luces to something that looked suspiciously like a mariachi costume. Every style and color seemed to work with his dark hair and green-gold cat eyes, so Alec wasn't sure what Magnus was searching for. Whatever he chose, Alec was sure it would look good. This outfit was no exception. Magnus was wearing black leather trousers, the material sleeking along his long legs as if the lean muscle had been dipped in ink. His belt was a metal snake, the lynx scales and the buckle a cobra's head with sapphire eyes. His cowl-neck shirt was a waterfall of midnight blue and indigo sequins, dipping low in front to show not only collarbones, but a long stretch of skin. Magnus spun, then regarded himself consideringly in the mirror, his back to Alec. The view made Alec's mouth go dry. Alec said, "I think you look nice." "Any concerns?" "Well," Alec said, "those pants would make it difficult to maneuver in a fight, but you won't need to fight. I can fight for you, if it comes up." Magnus looked taken aback, and Alec was not sure if he'd said something wrong until Magnus's expression softened. "I appreciate your offer. Now," he added, "I'm just going to try on one more thing." He disappeared back into the dressing room. Next, he appeared in a collarless suit with a matching uneven short cloak hanging carelessly from his shoulders. Qin Yun appeared in what seemed to be a combination of armor and a wedding dress. 5 minutes into their first store, Alec had picked out what Magnus described as a frock coat, long and black with medium-length tails. It was flexible enough to move and fight in, and loose enough in the right places to store his steely and serif blades. Magnus had wanted him to try on something with a little more color, but Alec had said no, and Magnus had not pushed the issue. The shirt beneath it was silk and deep blue, the color of Alec's eyes. After trying on a few rather quiet dresses, Qin Yun had seen Magnus parade out of the changing room wearing a gold suit based loosely on an Egyptian pharaoh's burial chamber, and came out next in an elaborate peach-colored hanbok. Magnus offered several compliments, and the race was on. Qin Yun was competitive with Magnus. Maybe all warlocks were competitive with each other. Alec hadn't met many and wouldn't know. He was trying not to worry too much about Qin Yun. Magnus clearly liked her, but Alec was awkward with strangers, and he desperately didn't want to be any more awkward on their romantic trip. How were he and Magnus meant to get to know each other better with a third wheel always around? Maybe not worrying was a lost cause. Alec was trying not to show he was worried, at least. Alec nudged the wide-eyed sales attendant next to him. "Where did you get these costumes?" The young woman shook her head, speaking in careful English.
"I have no idea. I have never seen any of these clothes before."
"Huh," Alec said. "Weird."
In the end, Magnus was sporting a shimmering white suit, decorated with what looked like iridescent dragon scales, wreathing him in opalescent light. He wore an ivory cloak that hung to his knees, and the collar of his shirt was undone, pearly material curling against the brown of his skin. Qin Yun had decided to go big, with an ornate black dress with massive ribbons looping around her hips. Intricate silver vines hung from her neck to the floor, and a fountain of flowers rose from behind her head. They asked Alec to help them with their final mask choices. For Magnus, it was between a gold mask with a plume of orange feathers fanning out in a half circle, and a reflective silver domino mask that was almost too bright to look at. Qin Yun's two choices were either a plain full-faced marble mask or a thin, naked wired mask that hardly covered anything, both ironic choices. Alec went with the silver one for Magnus and the wired one for Qin Yun. She fixed it over her impassive face with a faint air of satisfaction.
"You look good," Magnus told her.
His eyes slid to Alec, and he handed Alec a silk half-mask, the deep blue color of twilight. Alec accepted it, and Magnus smiled.
"And you look perfect. Let's go."
Dusk curtained the city. The palazzo was decorated with torches that dotted the tops of the walls. A white fog had settled over the streets around the palazzo, curling around pillars and blanketing canals, lending the scene an eerie glow. Alec could not tell if it was magic or naturally occurring. Over the marble facade of the building were fairy lights that sparkled and shifted, moving every other minute to spell out the words, "Any day but Valentine's Day." Alec was not a fan of parties.
but at least he could appreciate the reason behind this one. He had fought to stop Valentine Morgenstern. He would have given his life to do it. He hadn't given much thought to how Downworlders overall regarded Valentine, who thought they were unclean and planned to wipe the stain of their existence from the earth. Now he saw how scared they must have been. The Shadowhunters had many celebrated warriors. Alec hadn't realized how it would be for Downworlders to have a Downworlder victory, and war heroes of their own, not just of one clan or one family or one pack, but that belonged to all of Downworld together. He would have been even more sympathetic if the werewolf security team had not insisted on patting him down. Twice, the security didn't seem all that strict until they spotted Alec's runes. "This is ridiculous," he snapped. "I fought in the war whose victory you're celebrating. On the winning side," he added quickly. The head of security, the largest of the werewolves, Alec figured that made sense, had been summoned. He said to Alec in a low voice,
"We just don't want any trouble."
"I wasn't planning to be any trouble. I am only," Alec said clearly, "here to party."
"And I thought there were going to be two of you," the werewolf muttered.
"What?" Alec said. "Two Shadowhunters?" The werewolf shrugged his burly shoulders.
"Lord, I hope not."
Magnus said, "Are you finished with my dance partner yet? I understand it's difficult to keep your hands off him, but I really must insist." The security head shrugged and waved a hand.
"Fine, go."
"Thanks," said Alec in a low voice and reached for Magnus's hand. The security guards had confiscated his bow and arrow, but he wasn't too bothered since they'd missed the 6 seraph blades and 4 daggers he also had concealed about his person.
"These people are impossible."
Magnus moved back a fraction, so Alec missed catching his hand.
"Some of these people are my friends," said Magnus.
But then he shrugged and smiled.
"Some of my friends are impossible."
Alec was not entirely convinced. He was unsettled by the space between their hands. They went into the glittering mansion with that small, cold distance between them.
Chapter 12. Tread Softly. Johann Strauss's Emperor Waltz was playing in the grand ballroom. Magnus saw hundreds of masked people in elaborate costumes dancing in unison, and around them was music that could be seen as well as heard. As if ripped from a black and white sheet of paper and turned into bright living shapes, the notes floated in the air, drifting along currents of musical lines and wrapping around the glittering masks and elaborate hair of the dancers. Along the ceiling, the constellations were moving. No, they were the orchestra. Stars moved to suggest the shapes of people and instruments. Libra was first chair, playing the violin. Ursa Major next to him, his second. Aquila played the viola while Scorpio was on the bass. Orion played the cello. Hercules was on percussion. The stars played, while the masked couples danced, and the musical notes floated in between. Magnus moved down the Carrara marble stairs from the foyer into the ballroom, with Alec and Shinyon shadowing him like bodyguards.
"Prince Adean," he called, recognizing a friend.
Prince Adean, his swan mask a gorgeous contrast to his dark skin, sent Magnus a grin over the heads of his courtiers.
"You're on speaking terms with the prince?" Alec asked.
"I wouldn't speak to most of the Unseelie court princes," said Magnus. "You wouldn't believe the kind of things they get up to. They should only be thankful there are no fairy tabloids. Adean's the best of the bunch."
As they came to the foot of the staircase, they met a man in a lavender tuxedo and a full-face mask of El Muerto, his white hair slicked back. Magnus grinned.
"Our host, I believe."
"What makes you think that?"
asked the man in a low English accent.
"Who else could have thrown this party? I commend you on going all out. No sense in going half out."
Magnus reached over and shook his hand.
"Malcolm Fade, it's been a long time."
"Just before the millennium turned. I remember you were going through a particularly grungy period last I saw you."
"Yes, it was called grunge,"
I was surprised to hear you moved to Los Angeles, and they made you High Warlock. Malcolm raised his mask, and Magnus saw him smile, the expression always sweet and more than a little sad.
I know. Those fools.
Belated congratulations, said Magnus.
How's it going? You've been working on something, and clearly it was not your tan.
Oh, I dabble in many things, party planning among them.
Malcolm waved a hand toward the spectacle of the grand ballroom. He pulled off his absent-minded routine beautifully, but Magnus had known him a long time.
Glad you're enjoying my little soiree.
Two people came up behind Malcolm, one a blue-skinned fairy with lavender hair and webbed hands, and one a familiar face. Johnny Rook's sunglasses were pushed down his nose, which was reasonable if you thought wearing sunglasses indoors at night was reasonable in the first place. Over his sunglasses, Magnus saw his eyes widen in recognition, and he averted his gaze from Magnus's.
Oh, do you know each other?
You must know each other, said Malcolm dreamily.
This is Hyacinth, who is my indispensable party planner, and Johnny Rook.
I'm sure he's indispensable to somebody. Magnus gestured.
These are Alexander Lightwood, Shadowhunter, New York Institute, and Shin Young Jung, mysterious warrior with a mysterious past.
How mysterious,
began Malcolm, and then his attention was diverted by the arrival of several pallets of raw meat. He looked around helplessly.
Does anyone know what's to be done with all this raw meat?
That's for the werewolves. Hyacinth waved the delivery man over. I'll take care of it. However, your personal attention may be required in the drawing room.
She put her hand to a glittering seashell fixed in her ear and whispered something to Malcolm. The blood drained from the High Warlock of Los Angeles's already pale face.
Oh, dear. You'll excuse me. Our sirens have taken up residence next to the champagne fountain and are trying to drown guests in it.
He hurried off.
You were in the Shadow Market,
Alex said to Johnny Rook, recognition dawning.
You've never seen me before, said Johnny. You're not even seeing me right now.
He sprinted out of the ballroom. Alec was watching the whole room with a closed-off, suspicious look on his face. Many people in the crowd were returning his look with interest. Magnus had brought a cop to the party. He understood that. He couldn't blame Alec for being wary. Almost all downworlders had past stained red. Vampires did suck blood. Fairy and warlock magic went wrong. Werewolves lost control and other people lost limbs. At the same time, Magnus could not blame his fellow downworlders for being guarded either. Not so long ago, Shadowhunters had decorated their walls with downworlder heads.
Hey, Magnus,
called out a warlock wearing a plain green dress and a white plague doctor's mask, deep blue skin showing beneath. Magnus was delighted by her appearance.
Hello, darling, he said, and swept her into a hug.
After spinning her off her feet, he presented her proudly to his companions.
Alec, Xin Yun, this is Katerina Loss. She's one of my oldest friends.
Oh, said Katerina. I've heard a lot about you, Alexander Lightwood.
Alec looked alarmed. Magnus wanted them to like each other. He watched them watching each other. Well, these things took time.
May I speak to you a moment, Magnus? Katerina asked. In private.
I'll go search for our stone goat, said Xin Yun, heading off.
Katerina looked puzzled.
Just one of her more colorful figures of speech, Magnus said. She has a mysterious past, you see.
I should go too, said Alec.
He jogged to catch up with Xin Yun and conferred with her. It looked to Magnus like they were deciding who would search where.
I'll see you back here in the foyer, Magnus called.
Alec gave a thumbs up without turning around. Katerina hooked her hand around Magnus's elbow and hauled him away, like a schoolteacher with a misbehaving student. They entered a narrow alcove around the corner, where the music and noise of the party was muffled. She rounded on him.
I recently treated Tessa for wounds, she said, for inflicted on her by members of a demon-worshipping cult,
Katerina said.
She told me you were, and I quote, handling the coat. What's going on? Explain.
Magnus made a face. I may have had a hand in founding it.
How much of a hand?
Well, both.
Katerina bristled. I specifically told you not to do that.
You did? Magnus said. A bubble of hope grew within him. You remember what happened?
She gave him a look of distress.
You don't?
Someone took all my memories around the subject of this cult, said Magnus. I don't know who or why.
He sounded more desperate than he would have liked, more desperate than he wanted to be. His old friend's face was full of sympathy.
I don't know anything about it, she said. I met up with you and Ragnar for a brief vacation. You seemed troubled, but you were trying to laugh it off the way you always do. You and Ragnar said you had a brilliant idea to start a joke cult. I told you not to do it. That's it.
He, Katerina, and Ragnar had taken many trips together over the centuries. One memorable trip had gotten Magnus banished from Peru. He had always enjoyed those adventures more than any others. Being with his friends almost felt like having a home. He did not know if there would ever be another trip. Ragnar was dead, and Magnus might have done something terrible.
Why didn't you stop me? He said. You usually stop me.
I had to take an orphan child across an ocean to save his life.
Right, said Magnus. That's a good reason.
Katerina shook her head.
I took my eyes off you for 1 second.
She had worked in mundane hospitals in New York for decades. She saved orphans. She healed the sick. She'd always been the voice of reason in the trio that was Ragnar, Katerina, and Magnus.
So I planned with Ragnar to start a joke cult, and I guess I did it. Now, the joke cult is a real cult, and they have a new leader. It sounds like they're mixed up with a greater demon.
Even to Katerina, he wouldn't say the name of his father.
Sounds like the joke has gotten a little out of hand, Katerina said dryly.
Sounds like I'm the punchline. There are all these rumors the new leader is me. I have to find these guys. Do you know a man called Mori Shu?
Katerina shook her head. You know I don't know anyone.
A group of drunken fairies stumbled past. The celebration was noticeably ratcheting up in decibels and wildness. Katerina waited until they were alone again to continue.
You're in this mess and you still have a shadow hunter with you, she demanded. Magnus, I knew you were seeing him, but this is a long way past having fun. It's his duty to tell the Clave about you founding this cult. They'll hear the rumor you're leading it eventually, whether your Lightfoot tells them or not. The Nephilim won't look any further for a culprit. The Nephilim do not admit weakness. There's no room in their hearts for pity or mercy. I have seen the children of the angel murder their own for breaking their precious law. Magnus, we're talking about your life.
Katerina, said Magnus,
I love him.
She stared at him. Her eyes were the color of the ocean, swept by storms and with treasure sunk below the waves. She had worn a plague mask during real plagues. She had seen so many tragedies, and they both knew the worst tragedies were born of love.
Are you sure? She said quietly. You always hope for the best, but this time hope is too dangerous. This one could hurt you worse than the others. This one could get you killed.
I'm sure, said Magnus. Am I sure it will work out? He thought of the small coldness between him and Alec before they had entered the party. He thought of all the secrets he was still keeping.
No, but I'm sure I love him.
Katerina's eyes were sad.
But does he love you? For now, Magnus said. And if you'll excuse me, I need to go search out the stone goat, if you understand my meaning.
I don't, said Katerina.
But good luck, I guess.
For the next hour, Magnus dedicated himself to his task of finding this stupid goat. He decided to cover the main floor, since Shinyan and Alec had both gone elsewhere, and commenced a careful study of the rooms one by one, first the sitting, and then the music, and then the game room, subtly using his magic to detect hidden latches or levers or buttons that opened up to secret passageways. Unfortunately, the entire mansion was so steeped in magic from the celebration that all his discovery spells came back distorted and inconclusive. Magnus kept at it, taking his time to feel through the rooms as he navigated around the crowds, brushing his hand along all the usual suspects, twisting candelabras, pulling books, pushing against statues. He tugged a bell pull that turned out to be seaweed, revealing a mostly underwater room where a group of mermaids were frolicking with a lone vampire. The vampire, a lunatic of Magnus's acquaintance named Elliot, waved at him until the water foamed.
"Don't mind me," Magnus called. "Carry on splashing."
Nothing was out of the ordinary.
He reached the smoking room at the end of the west wing. A large mantle on the side wall served as the centerpiece of this richly furnished room, filled with curved and heavily plush Victorian furniture. Each of the pieces was monstrously out of proportion. A gigantic button-tucked red settee the size of a car was arranged next to a pair of blue high-back chairs that looked as if they were meant for children. Along each wall were moving wallpapers and brass sconces alternating with gramophones piping jazz. A dryad, not the one he'd met earlier, was sitting on a swing dangling from a chandelier in the center of the room. A taupe daybed hung vertically against the far wall and was currently being enjoyed by a vampire lounging as if she were right side up. Magnus hadn't known that Malcolm dabbled in anti-gravity magic, but he appreciated the high warlock of the City of Angels' flair.
"You look like you could use a smoke, Magnus Bane," said a woman from somewhere off to the side.
He followed the sound of the voice and saw a mahogany-skinned woman wearing a chic metal dress that matched her bronze hair perfectly. Her mask was a cascade of golden stars that ran from the top of her head down past her chin. They matched her pupils, which were star-shaped, too.
"Hypatia," said Magnus. "Thanks, but I quit 100 years ago. I was going through a rebellious phase."
Hypatia Bex was a London-based warlock with an affinity for business and property ownership. Their paths had crossed a few times over the years, and they had been rather close at one point, but that was long ago, over a century. He took a seat opposite Hypatia, in the slightly too small high-backed chairs. Hypatia crossed her legs and leaned forward, taking a long drag.
"I heard a rather nasty rumor about you."
Magnus also crossed his legs, but leaned back.
"Do tell. I love a good nasty rumor."
"Leading a cult called the Crimson Hand to glory and destruction?" Hypatia asked. "You naughty boy."
Magnus supposed he shouldn't be surprised that Hypatia knew about the cult. Unlike small-time Johnny Rook, Hypatia was the big leagues. She'd run a downworld salon in the early 1900s, the center for every scandal in London. Magnus remembered all the secrets she'd known then, and she was a collector. He could only imagine she had a great many more by now.
"I cannot deny being a naughty boy in the more general sense," Magnus admitted. "Glory and destruction, however, is not my style. The rumor's totally unfounded."
Hypatia gave a graceful shrug.
"It did seem far-fetched, but it appears to be spreading like wildfire these last few days. You might want to consider how it looks, running a whole cult and carrying on with a shadow hunter. Not just a shadow hunter, but the son of two members of Valentine's Circle? That's not a rumor." "Glad to hear it," Hypatia said. "He sounds like a disaster."
"It's a fact," said Magnus. "And he is a delight."
The expression on Hypatia's face was a picture. In all the years he'd known her, Magnus had never actually seen her look shocked before.
"You would do well to remember that you are one of the most prominent warlocks in the world," said Hypatia when she'd recovered herself. "There are downworlders who look to you as an example. There are eyes on you."
"Usually," said Magnus, "it's my dashing good looks."
"Don't be dismissive," Hypatia said sharply.
Hypatia, said Magnus. Have you ever known me to care how things look? Gold earrings swung against her dark brown skin as she shook her head.
No, but you do care about others, and I am sure you care about this Alec Lightwood.